What's your opinion? This is It's Debatable.
Welcome to the fifth episode of It's Debatable, where every week students from the Department of International Relations at the University of Malta discuss a hot topic from current affairs. I am May Sayem, and I will be your host for the next half hour. Today our topic for debate deals with cyberterrorism and warfare. Alex Bincini and Andrea Ghialompardi are our students. We have Ms. Valentina Casa from the Department of International Relations to introduce the subject. Ms. Valentina Kassar, thank you for joining us today. Our theme for today is cyber warfare and terrorism. Do you agree that this is the newest security issue?
Before touching upon cyber warfare and terrorism, it's important to contextualize this important issue as the newest security issue, so to speak, by first taking a step back and looking at security in itself and remembering what we mean by the term security and the way that this concept has evolved over the past decades. Whereas the traditional textbook definition of security would be the relative freedom from war, this definition has evolved over time. We may define security as the notion of a state not being in danger of having to sacrifice its core values if it wishes to avoid war. We may also define security as the idea that the quality of life for the inhabitants of a state should not be threatened. So the way we define security has evolved in tandem with what we perceive as what we call the referent object of security, that is, what or who do we seek to protect? Whose security are we in fact talking about? We don't exclusively speak about the security of states anymore, but the security of communities, the security of individuals, as well as to that of states.
And how did this broadening of the notion of security come about?
I would say that this broadening of the concept was made possible by two factors. Firstly, the end of the Cold War, which facilitated a fundamental shift in the way that we actually perceive the international agenda and the world around us. And secondly, the advancements that have taken place in globalization and information technology. This has transformed the way we function and go about our daily lives, be it at an individual level, a social level, a corporate level, and also primarily at a governmental level. These changes have meant a host of issues have gained prominence on the security agenda besides conflict between states and thus this evolution in the notion of security. Nowadays, it has become common to speak of energy security and environmental security. Financial and economic concerns as well as health issues are increasingly acknowledged as having a strong impact on the stability of states, communities or individuals.
So does cybersecurity therefore stand out as a new security issue?
It's no surprise that cybersecurity has become a major concern and a prominent security issue. As I mentioned earlier, the fact that we conduct our daily lives within the realm of information technology and in front of our computers makes us as individuals as well as societies vulnerable within this sphere. Thus, while the debate over cybersecurity has been ongoing for several years, it is a concept that has gained greater prominence recently, particularly due to the fact that several countries have gone so far as to identify cybersecurity as a key concern and priority in their national security and defense strategies and documents.
Ms. Kassar, could you please give us some examples?
2010 was quite an active year in this regard. The national security strategy that was published by the British government in 2010, which was entitled A Strong Britain in an Age of Uncertainty, dedicates much attention to the new threats posed by both state actors as well as non-state actors, and in turn the possibility of cyber attack. Likewise, the United States also highlighted within its 2010 national security strategy the need to defend against challenges to the cyber networks that we depend upon. Thus, we also have seen US defense capabilities focus on ensuring a resilient cyber domain. So it's interesting to see the way this new security issue has been integrated within traditional defense fora and defense discussions. Mm-hmm. The strategic concept published by NATO in the same year also highlighted the threat posed by cyber attacks and the importance of a coordinated cyber defense in the light of this. In fact, NATO's defense ministers went on to adopt a cyber defense policy and action plan later on in 2011. These are just a few examples. It's evident that this new security issue will remain with us, remaining a concern for both private citizens and state and government security. Likewise, I believe that a successful defense against this threat will only be made possible and maintained through an effective and close collaboration between both governments, between themselves, as well as governments and the private sector.
Thank you so much, Ms. Kassar, for joining us today. That was a really insightful introduction.
Thank you.
And now to start off our debate, Andrea, what exactly is the threat brought about by cyberterrorism?
Well, a definition from the FBI states that cyberterrorism is any premeditated, politically motivated attack against information computer systems, computer programs and data which results in violence against non-combatant targets by subnational groups or clandestine agents. I believe that this definition is quite narrow, as it compares cyberterrorism to traditional terrorism. One must distinguish between the two. Even though there are examples of cyberterrorism causing physical harm, the majority of these attacks target to corrupt vital software that governments and also international corporations with massive levels of influence have on a country and that major populations use. Cyberterrorism and also cyber warfare are examples on how there is a new arena in war where it can be waged. As human modern life falls deep into the reliance on IT and internet for survival, attacking this vital resource is a very serious matter. Nowadays, in developed countries, nearly everything is stored or run by computers and IT databases. An example could include banking industry, military installations, power plants, air traffic control centers, and also water systems. I have mentioned just a few examples, and each one of them are vital installations for human and state survival nowadays. To place an example up for analysis, let us take military installations. Nowadays, the modern armies of the strongest states in the world rely heavily on IT for systems to work and even to issue simple orders. IT is vital in the communication between bases and armies, let alone when military units are deployed in action. The fact that these things are based on IT services shows that every single one is vulnerable to a cyber attack. The threat that a cyber attack can cripple a country's freshwater system or even power system is a very serious one.
Okay, Alex, can you shed some light on any cyber attacks that have taken place in recent years?
Yeah, I can. I mean, there are two cases that I'd like to bring to this discussion. In April and May of 2007, hackers unleashed a wave of cyber attacks that crippled hundreds of government and corporate sites in Estonia. This is what many believe to have been the first instance of a sustained international cyber war. The assault affected Estonian organizations such as the Estonian Parliament, banks, ministries, and broadcasters. The campaign lasted 22 days, and the online assault occurred shortly after Estonia decided to move a bronze Soviet World War II memorial from downtown Tallinn. Estonian authorities later traced the denial of service attacks to Russia, but Russian authorities denied the accusation that they were to blame. It was only 2 years later, in 2009, when a Russian youth group claimed responsibility for the attack. 2 years later, in 2009, a Russian youth group claimed responsibility for the attack, but many still believe a larger player was to blame. Stuxnet is the name given to a computer worm discovered in June 2010. It is the first discovered malware that spies on and subverts industrial systems, such as power stations. Iran was the hardest hit by Stuxnet. Almost 60% of all infected PCs were located in that country, according to Symantec, the world's largest maker of security software for computers. The probable target is widely suspected to have been uranium enrichment infrastructure in Iran, namely the Natanz nuclear facilities. However, Dr. Sandra Geiken, a senior researcher and expert on cyberwar at the Freie Universität in Berlin, has argued that the attack on Iran was simply a ruse. Stuxnet's real purpose, in his opinion, was to infiltrate over 100,000 industrial plants worldwide, obtaining information on their readiness and reactions. Such information would provide invaluable for any cyber war unit, and the possibility of attacking a country through cyberspace by attacking its industrial systems, creating hundreds of disasters similar to those seen in Chernobyl, is a very real possibility.
Thank you, Alex. Now back to you, Andrea. Can you define cyberterrorism as a completely different strand of terrorism? In other words, ideologically, ethically, and brought about by different goals?
I definitely agree that one can define cyberterrorism as a different strand to traditional terrorism, as the whole nature of the attack is different to violent traditional attacks. A very recent example of an alleged cyber attack on the US military is the attack on the US spy drone over Iranian airspace. Iran claimed that the drone was spying on Iran due to the suspicions that Iran is secretly developing nuclear weapons. Iranian authorities claimed that they managed to hack into the drone system and manually land it with minimal damage. This goes to show just how important cyber defense systems are in modern warfare. Even though the US has denied any sort of cyber attack on a drone, claiming it had malfunctioned, the effects on the US are devastating, as now Iran claims one of the US military's most top secret weapons. They can also be different in the ideological sense. A setting group that most people have heard of recently are Anonymous. Anonymous are a hacking group who have waged war on social networks and financial institutions. They claim that they are corruption of all democratic states, saying that they steal money and limit the privacy of individual lives. This example of a cyber terrorist organization gives off the impression of a kind of Robin Hood-like feature. They wish to steal from the rich and to give it back to the poor, or so they say. This shows how cyber terrorist groups have different ideologies and goals when compared to traditional terrorist organizations. They conduct non-violent but yet terrifying and devastating attacks, when successful, on the victims targeted.
Thank you, guys. We'll have to stop for a short break here.
Chiquitita, tell me what's wrong. You're in shame by your own sorrow. In your eyes, there is no hope for tomorrow. How I hate to see you like this. There is no way you can deny it. I can see that you're all so sad, so quiet. Chiquitita, tell me the truth. I'm a shoulder you can cry on. Your best friend, I'm the one you must rely on. You were always sure of yourself. Now I see you broken and pathetic. Chiquitita, you and I know how the heartaches come and they go and the scars they're leaving. You will be dancing once again and the pain will end. You will have no time for grieving. Chiquitita, you and I cry, but the sun is no way you can deny it. I see that you're all so sad, so quiet. Chiquitita, you and I. The sun is still in the sky.
Welcome back to this episode of It's Debatable, a platform for discussion for the students at the University of Malta. Today we're discussing cyber war and warfare.
On Live With Us, we have Miss Lara Pace from Comnet in Malta.
How relevant is the threat of cyber terrorism in today's political affairs?
I think it's extremely relevant because the global economy is so reliant on the internet. You know, everybody's day-to-day transactions, any administration's transactions, happen over the internet. So it's extremely important for the internet to be as secure as possible, because the term cyber warfare is being used more often in political discussion, and I believe it's because of this reliance. So everybody needs to work towards a secure and reliable internet to continue helping the global economy, etc.
Okay, and how national and international institutions are trying to react and to defend themselves from such threat?
Well, there's a lot of global cooperation in trying to address cybersecurity. Our office, Comnet, has developed and formulated a proposal for a Commonwealth-led cybercrime initiative, which primarily is designed to assist developing Commonwealth countries' build capacity to address cybercrime. It's a collaborative endeavor with other international organizations such as Council of Europe, United Nations Office for Drugs and Crime, the ITU. The initiative received its endorsement in October 2011 at CHOGM, and currently we're working on moving the initiative from concept to implementation.
Okay.
Addressing cybersecurity, it's agreed that it has to happen through a global, multi-stakeholder approach. And this is what the Cybercrime Initiative is. So it's getting big organizations and smaller organizations with all different expertise, so legal expertise, technical expertise, policy, institutional, etc., and you know, combining all efforts on the ground, not duplicating resources that currently exist, and addressing cybercrime through this holistic approach. And that's what the Cybercrime Initiative is all about.
Okay.
And Comnet, Comnet Foundation is the secretariat, so that's what we're doing.
Thank you, Miss Lara Pace. Certainly now, we need maybe a bit of reflection on the issue of cyber terrorism. Nowadays, cyber terrorism represents, as we said, a great challenge for international in the agenda of international affairs. However, we should also discuss more about the origin of cyber terrorism in itself and how it is impacted on the international political scenarios. Now, when we discuss about cyber terrorism, I think that we should more reflect on the 9/11 events, because the 9/11 events, in a sort of way, was in part also the result of exchange of information, exchange of data, exchange and planification of terrorists, also through technological elements. So, once again, what we should think is that countries and states, international organizations, underestimated the risk and the problems of terrorism, of cyber terrorism. The following step in the cyber terrorism scenario, I think, is more evident if we look at the financial aspects. In fact, in 1999 and even later on, many countries and international organizations started to make important legislative reforms regarding the financial transaction. So in this sense, we can see how terrorism started to get more involved on an economic and financial aspects, in the sense that many terrorist groups used to fund themselves expanding their activities. Certainly, the issue of cyber terrorism, as Ms. Kassar previously mentioned, is also related to the reaction that states and the legislative measures that states took to prevent such attacks. Now, I would like to offer a very brief reflection on the Patriot Act, which is applied in the United States, and also to take into consideration the new legislative measures that are considered by certain states regarding ACTA measures. In particular, someone can say that these measures, from one side, are defending the integrity and the security of the states. But at the same time, we should also consider the freedom of citizens and individuals to use internet and use all the possible resources. And this certainly, if ACTA or any other further legislative measures regarding in order to have a technological control by states, this certainly would reduce the freedom of citizens. And I think that in the near future, states should also more consider this perspective. Now I pass to you, Mace.
Now back to you, Alex. How threatened do you believe countries are by cyber warfare?
Well, I mean, I believe that countries feel very threatened by the endless possibilities of cyber warfare against them. As we mentioned before, in developed countries, nearly everything is stored on computers, servers, and IT databases. Along with this, even industrial plants can be accessed through controlled passages in cyberspace. The idea of the enemy having to physically step onto your land has diminished. The enemy can remain safe and within cover in a bunker whilst hacking into your top-secret military files. Many nations around the world have recognized the importance of updating their protection towards cyber war, and many have created separate divisions within their departments of defense to cope with this. In current news, for example, South Korea is such a country that is in the process of improving its cybersecurity, as it recognizes that cyber attacks are most efficient in countries with strong information technology. Only 2 hours after the death of North Korean leader Kim Jong-il, the cyber alert level was raised to Infocon 4, which states a general threat. North Korea has been blamed in the past for cyber attacks upon its neighbor, shutting down 20 million clients from the National Agricultural Cooperative Federation's automated teller machines and banking services. South Korea may be asking itself now whether previous attacks simply a test. Iran, too, has only recently embarked to boost its offensive and defensive cyber warfare capabilities. Some suggest that Tehran is investing roughly $1 billion into developing new technology and the hiring of new experts into the field. As technology improves, nations have to keep up with the times. Tomorrow's wars will be fought not just with guns, but also with a click of a mouse half a world away. That simple click will be linked to weaponized software that could take out anything from the power grid to a chemical plant. That is the true power behind cyber warfare, and one that the world is slowly getting to grips with.
Thank you, Andrea and Alex. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today. On behalf of the team behind It's Debatable, I would like to thank our academic advisor, Ms. Valentina Kassar, and our radio technician, Mr. Carmelo Gregg. I do hope you enjoyed your today's program. I am Mae Sayem, and on behalf of the Department of International Relations and the Malta International Relations Students Association, I thank you for tuning in and hope you will join us next week. Until then, keep updated.
You have just had the pleasure of listening to another student-run episode of It's Debatable, produced by the Department of International Relations within the Faculty of Arts at the University of Malta. For more information, kindly visit mrsa.org.mt. Tune in next week, same time, same frequency.